Welcome to Atlanta Sales Talk Radio. This is your host, Stone Payton, and visibly not present in the studio this afternoon is my co-host, Steve Cadley. He's off helping some folks actually do the real work of selling, but I'm delighted to introduce our guest host today, Mr. Jim Bulger. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, Stone. I'm so happy to be here. I'll do my best sitting in for Steve today.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Do you need some whiskey with some lemon in it? I understand your voice is a little bit shot today, too, but you sound great so far.
Well, you know, a little bit of the weather change, and sure enough, catch a little bit of a head cold, you know, and you have to just kind of deal with that, so I'll croak my way through it here.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a great show, as they always are, but the purpose of Atlanta Sales Talk Radio, which really is Steve Cadley's baby, I just usually stay behind the board and turn the buttons and all that. But it's to visit with sales professionals, sales leaders, top performers in the sales arena, and anyone out there exchanging goods and services for financial remuneration. It's to explore that world and get some insight into what they do, how they do it, and be an informative platform for our listeners. I don't think today is going to be any exception at all. We are blessed to have a return guest, a gentleman by the name of Rico Pena. And I like having him back because I like to say Pena. That's just fun to say, Pena. But Rico's back, and he's actually brought a guest with him that we'll visit with that gentleman a little bit later in the program. But before we go there, we want to get caught up with Rico on all fronts of the Client Nation, but which is the book that he authored. But we want to talk about this upcoming event in January, the Stay in the Game event. Welcome to the show, Rico.
Hey, Stone, welcome. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, man, we are delighted to have you. So is this thing filling up? Are people buying tickets? How's it going?
Absolutely. We are at 80% for all our vendors. We're at 45% for our VIP seats. The word's getting out. We've already raised $3,500 for the Wounded Warrior Project. So we're excited. The word's really getting out.
So say more about this Wounded Warrior Project. Are you familiar with this, Jim, at all, this Wounded Warrior thing?
Just a little bit. I'd like to hear more about it.
The Wounded Warrior Project began after our soldiers kept coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq. As you guys know, with the IEDs and loss of limbs and PTSD. And before the Wounded Warrior Project, it wasn't really anything other than the VA providing services to help those soldiers assimilate back into civilian world. Well, the Wounded Warrior Project was started for that particular entity, not just for the warriors, but for their families as well. So they get a lot of help with their PT, with their physical fitness, with their finances, with their mental fitness. And it's an amazing project that has taken off. It's nationwide. And it's one of those national entities that really is there to serve the individuals that they're there for. And being a former Marine myself, also a wounded warrior, we didn't have that when we got back. So we really want to get the word out about this project because it really does benefit a lot of different people and different families.
So wounded or not, I got to believe that going to war, anyone in your immediate family going to war has got to wreak havoc on your financial life. Holly, my wife is a traveling consultant for IBM. She's a grand poobah of learning or something. She leaves town for 2 weeks in a row. Our finances are upside down. I forget to pay the mortgage. But does that happen in military families?
Absolutely. You'd be surprised how many, especially kids who come from high school straight into the military, don't have a good foundation financially, and they get married early, and you're dependent on the finances coming from the government. So if you don't have a good foundation of finances, you can wreak a lot of havoc financially from home and food and what to do and support, especially some of them who got out of training and straight into Iraq and Afghanistan. Families didn't have any time to have any sustainability. The Wounded Warrior Project provides them with resources and advisors and mentors and people who are there for the families who have been left behind, but also helping the families to deal with the warriors as they come home, what to expect, what to do, and have a support system.
I think that's terrific. Now, do you have any military connection at all, Jim? I grew up in a military town, but my folks were teachers.
No, I don't either. I was kind of the same way, a military town and a military family, but I mean, what a great cause, and obviously with the proceeds from this,
absolutely
helping that, no better thing that people can do both for themselves as well as for their community, as well as for those veterans.
And we're all about supporting our community, including our veterans. So that's one of the big reasons the summit was created, why we call it Stay in the Game, is how do we help the individuals, the organizations, those who have aspirations to learn it. You can't stay in the game with support, with organizations, with mentors. You can make those dreams come true. We're going to help you get those tools to do so.
So who do you anticipate, and maybe you already have a pretty good feel for it, who do you anticipate will be there? Give us a profile of the attendee that will be there.
Typically, we attract professional business women ages 35 to 65.
Color me there. No, I'm kidding. I'm married. It was just a joke.
Singles, married, male, female. Usually, the entrepreneur who is either been in business for 2 or more years, companies and organizations who have reached a certain plateau and either want to reconnect with the community or want to find the new things that are happening in the next year. We bring in a lot of leaders in their industry to tell us what's coming up in 2012, how to prepare for the economy, to prepare for the client's buying behaviors or technology, things of that nature that's going to help you stay in the game, get into business. You're going to have a lot of different high-level vendors, such as one of our top sponsors, which is Belk at the Forum, who is also not only supporting the community, but supports the idea of helping individuals not only be part of the community, but able to prosper within that community.
So this is Atlanta Sales Talk Radio. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to get a little bit of input from you on this this whole idea of selling and selling effectively. And I'll just share a very personal experience with you. I have never been able to hold down a real job. I've been a commission-based salesperson for much of my career. And then I found Lee Cantor in this organization. I jumped on his coattails, and I'm not letting go. But I still find myself in selling situations a great deal, even as a principal of this organization. And I got to tell you, last week, it didn't feel like I did anything differently than I did the previous 6 weeks. And we wrote 3 pretty substantial deals. I just feel like I wish I could find something that was repeatable, transferable, that I could say, wow, this is how you do this, and this is how you do it again and again and again. Can you speak to that challenge? Because I can't be the only one that's struggling with that.
Absolutely. First, I would recommend that you reread my book.
It's on my nightstand, by the way. All kidding aside, that was not just a setup. This gentleman's book is on my nightstand, and the full disclosure is I haven't finished it. But what you've had to say about Client Nation is it's really ringing true for me.
Thank you. Typically, what occurs is that what we find, and when I work with whether it's retail or individual organizations, is that they're so focused on what it is they're selling. They're so focused on the end game of that sale versus just focusing on building a relationship with the person you're speaking to, understanding their needs or their value or the reason why they're there. Selling is more about listening, and it's about building that relation, providing a solution. What we've done is taken it further into understanding behaviors and body language to make sure that the message you're connecting with resonates with that person. Probably what you did, you were either not worried about the outcome, you either knew that person, and you were able to connect what you offer to what they were looking for, which made sense. It was a comfortable arena to do business. And more often than not, most salespeople don't ask for the business. They assume it's just going to happen. Mm-hmm. There are 2 different styles of individuals you're going to deal with. People who need to build trust before they like you, or people who want to like you before they trust you.
That simplifies things a great deal.
94% of why most sales don't happen is someone's trying to build trust and the other person's trying to like you. If you don't recognize which is which,
right,
that's why deals don't happen. And it's really that simple.
Can it really be that simple, Jim?
Well, I think it can. And as companies have moved from kind of the old way of selling to the more relational sell,
correct,
more consultative sell, the whole skill set that they look for in their business development people changes too, correct?
Absolutely. We have called it consultative relationship selling, where they're really focusing on how to build a relationship with the consumer. One of probably the best examples I can have that I brought in today, and his name is Ivan. He's one of the heads of Belk at the Forum. And I've worked with a lot of his employees, his retail sales. And we saw a dramatic change from focus on what your client wants, provide that service exceptionally, focus on how to create a better experience, and all of the finances you want will come. And now it's turned into one of the top Belks in the industry, one of the prototypes. So I brought Ivan today. to talk about their customer service, their business, and to let a lot of your listeners know, what does it really take to develop one of the top retail stores in the Belk chain? So welcome, Ivan.
Thank you, Rico. It's nice to be here.
Oh, tell a little about the listeners for the listeners out there, a little bit about you and how you started with Belk, and how have you been able to turn a brand new Belk that was not on the map to one of the prototype stores in the industry?
Well, one of the first things that I, you know, had the task of taking care of is really kind of creating a new image for the store. Certainly, it had already been clearly established. So for me to come in there and really kind of give it a mission statement, what is it that we're ultimately going to stand for, and then get the associates to hop on the bandwagon, if you will, and then see that mission and then ultimately accomplish the goal of being really a great place to have a great shopping experience. So, you know, the first part of that was the cleanup process, helping them to understand the standards and things of that sort. And then the next part was what's the next step? How do we attract customers? How do we provide a wow experience? And that was through heavy involvement within the community. And quite frankly, a lot of the relationships developed with people such as yourself. I remember the first day that you come in the store and you had proposed this expo that you were putting together for a group of women. And it was really my first interaction with a community, a person in the community. And so I said to myself, well, why me? Why this store? And he said, well, quite frankly, because I'm involved in the community. I want to help the community. And I thought it was a great business opportunity to not only promote the store, but get involved into an event. And so since that time, obviously it was a great way to promote a product, help young women in the business learn how to apply makeup, and basically be able to establish a greater clientele or a base of individuals that we may not have otherwise had. So that was kind of a stepping stone in getting out in events in the community. So from there, it kind of escalated with meeting more people in the industry that were interested in using our store as a forum for their organizations to maybe provide fashion shows, business-to-business events, and really create greater relationships and snowball the success that we've had in our store. So, and because of that, I'm quite proud to announce that we were the number one store in all of Belk last year.
Wow!
With the greatest comp increase, and a lot of that has to do with the relationships that we've developed and built, and the service that we provided as customers were coming in and out of the doors, and that's continued. So we want to make it bigger and better, and we're always seeking different avenues to see what we can do to build the business. So that's essentially how it all grew from there.
Nothing to it, right? So you talked about, there were two words that you mentioned that sort of struck a chord with me. One was mission and the other was standards. And I'd be interested to hear more from your perspective about how standards impacted your ability to build and sustain the culture that you obviously are beginning to achieve here. And I'd be curious about how you went about establishing, and reinforcing this whole idea of mission, because I have been on the periphery of consulting for some time in my career, and I've watched organizations really struggle with that, and I've watched employees treat it with not a great deal of reverence. So how did you pull it off?
It was time. It took time. I've been there for 3 years. There are certain things that associates can grasp. So we took one piece, and that was the level of service and the standard that we were going to set so that when the customer came in, it was clean, neat, and organized and easy to shop. So once we helped them to understand the expectation,
and
the standard.
And you have to define that, right? Because it's open to interpretation. If that's the only thing on the wall poster, that doesn't cut it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we have our management team that works specifically with the associates, so they understand the basics. You know, what is it that's expected of them day in and day out? Once they master that, then the rest becomes natural. It becomes part of the culture, and they don't have to think about it. So they know what they have to do when they come in. They make sure they do it, and they don't have to think about it, which gives them the ability to move to the next step, and that's focusing on the customer, the level of service. And something what Rico mentioned earlier is identifying that individual's needs by listening to them, looking at some of their body languages, really understanding what it is they're coming in for. And quite frankly, if it's just to come and see and spend time with the associates because they're friendly. So the first process was creating the standard, and then from there, helping them to understand that the number one reason that they are there is to serve the customer. And while you said, how do you define that? There's parameters. There's courteous and friendly behavior, making yourself available. How prompt are we greeting? How often are we making them available for assistance? Are we suggestive selling? Are we bringing three products to the floor and shoes? There's many parameters that help guide the level of service that they're giving to the guests that come in. And then we follow up with them, and we encourage them, we praise them, and we talk about it every day. And we also share experiences that guests have when they come into the store. And it's transcended into a successful recipe. And I don't want to say everybody's bought into it, but it's been the mantra. And that's really given us the boost of maybe not going to another retailer, because they know that they can come and find everything that they want close by and have a pleasurable experience while doing so. And that's kind of guided us over the past year and a half.
Well, and I would think that once those standards are established and they begin to be met, I would think that a critical mass of employees start to take some real pride in that, and that sort of feeds itself, yeah?
Absolutely, and that's a great statement. We try and instill in the associates that it's like you're at home, and how do you treat your home? And if someone comes in and they see stuff on the floor, they're either going to do one of two things. They're going to think people don't care, or they're going to think the store is unorganized and walk out. But again, if you notice these things, as you notice your surroundings, don't view things with blinders. And as you're going around and you're seeing these things, take care of it. Take less than 30 seconds. We have a take care of it now philosophy. You see it, you take care of it, and it'll take less than 30 seconds. I can't tell you how many associates will come to me and they'll say, well, that takes too long. Oh, well, let's do a test. Okay, and we'll actually act it out. And I'll hold my watch out. I'll look at it, and it really is like 6 seconds. And they understand. It's also helped by explaining the whys of why we do things. That's also helped the associates to understand, they may not necessarily agree with it, but here's why we're doing it. So we get a better buy-in and an overall contribution to what we talked about earlier, the mission of the store. And that's really being the destination shop for all of your shopping needs for the woman as well as the family.
Well, that's my follow-up question on mission. And again, I'm part of the executive team for this little organization, and we're wrestling with some of these issues on a smaller scale. So this is like real-life consulting I'm getting on the air. But do you seek consensus in developing a mission, or is that your job as a leader? You got to go out and declare and say, this is the train. It leaves now. If you want to, what consensus, or do you declare?
No, I was going to say, I think a mission and standards are only good as the leadership who exemplify it. If the leadership are not the example and create the culture, what the mission and standards, like you said, laughable. And, Ivan's being humble, but we've interviewed just about every employee in that store. And the primary catalyst of the change and why the mission works is Ivan's leadership. That because he lives it, understands it, it also cultivates that culture. So to your point is that if the leadership's not there, if they're not living the mission and the standards and setting the example, it's just a bunch of words written on a piece of paper.
Rico had said something to me one time. I do try and walk the walk and expect, I inspect what I expect. And Rico helped me to use words to help motivate the associates, such as I believe and I have confidence in your ability to get this done. There's some words that resonate within the associate population, and it helps them to act out, you know, what it is we're ultimately trying to accomplish in the store. So so that's been very successful for us as well.
So semantic specific language is every bit as important as body language you mentioned.
Absolutely.
You mentioned earlier. Now, Jim, you're no stranger to retail. You're ex-Toys R Us. Right. You're the reason that they have buggies at Toys R Us. It's a story we can tell another time.
That's right.
But I have to believe, and I want to get it validated from your perspective, I have to believe that doing what he has pulled off, it's got to be tougher in a retail environment with part-time workers, some of whom may be a little less educated than others, younger workers. That's got to be at least as tough, if not tougher, in that environment than it is on the seventh floor, you know, at 2300 Lakeview here.
Well, I think it is and it isn't. You know, as you know now, I do a lot of work with companies, specifically on employee engagement and really getting those cultures ingrained in the organization. And I think one of the things that Ivan said is clear, is that it has to be demonstrated by management, and it has to be communicated, the daily communication about those values and the ability that management has, or the good sense they have, to delegate some of the responsibility for those, where really you're telling your employees, if this is an environment that you enjoy, if this is an environment that you embrace, then it's your job to protect it. And the way you protect it is by instilling those same values in your coworkers. So I think that regardless of whether somebody's full-time or part-time, whether they're seasonal or year-round, I think that the same values, let's face it, everybody's trying to find an environment that they enjoy working in and management that they respect, because they do walk the walk and they do demonstrate the same values. I mean, the horrific part of a lot of companies is they put together their core values or their mission statement and they put it up poster size and hang it in the lobby or hang it in the break room. And no employee in that organization could ever tell you what the core values and the mission statement were without looking at the poster.
Right.
And obviously in an organization like Belk, that's not the case, because they're talking about it all the time. And the more you talk about it, the stronger they become. And first they become habit, then they become something to really be embraced and protected in the organization. And they're non-negotiable for people that, you know, really want to be a part of that and really want to advance the organization.
Jim actually said something very interesting with regard to associate engagement, to just really, really caring for the associate, where if you take care of the associates, they'll take care of the customer. And Belk does have seven core values. And one of the things that we had done when we went out and we did the Belk as an organization had done a whole rebranding campaign about a year ago now. And one of the things that we were challenged, pick two or three of those missions, those values, and be the best at it. And one of the things that we did was relentless with customer care and the development of our associates. At least that was two of mine. And then went out and challenged my management team, what are your two things you're going to stand for? And then put that out to the associates, and it's helped them be a little bit more focused. So instead of just looking at a poster on a board, what two things they clearly identify with that they can make a difference with. And I think that's kind of helped execute the values put out by Belk.
Well, several of the books that are under Rico's book on my nightstand would suggest that non-monetary compensation can be effectively used in the work environment. And it sounds good on the printed page, but in real life, do people really respond to other things than money in this kind of a situation?
I think it depends on who you're talking to. Okay. You know, we're all motivated by different things. Money certainly helps sustain our livelihood, but I have heard it from a number amount of my associates. We really enjoy working here. And that quite frankly says it all. They love coming to work. And that makes me feel good, because in a retail environment, the money is not the most high paying type of profession. So that says a lot. And when people enjoy coming to work and they can have a positive influence or or have a positive influence on a customer coming in the store, that helps reduce our turnover, increase productivity. That's a big part of. In fact, I tell my associates all the time, if you think the customer's coming in here to buy something, they're not. They're coming in here because they want to have that encounter with each one of you. They enjoy you and having conversations with you and the level of service you provide. So I wouldn't say it works. It reigns true, and it's been a great recipe for success.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. So talk to us a little bit more, if you would, Ivan, about your role in this event. What are you going to be doing on January the 14th with these guys?
My role is basically providing fashion for some of the people that are going to be showing off some how to dress in a professional environment, how to put yourself in a very nice look when you're out in the professional environment. What are some of the latest trends, but not being inappropriate? So my role is to help the people at the summit understand a professional look. And quite frankly, what's a look after you're in a business meeting, and how do you move into that after hours business type of scenario, and what's appropriate? So it's really the fashion piece. We'll have some cosmetics as cosmetic applications as well. What's too much makeup? What's not enough makeup? And things of that sort.
Fathers of 14-year-olds sometimes have a different take on the answer to that question. Just so you know.
Yeah, I have a 3-year-old girl. I'm not there yet, but. I know what you're talking about. Those are just some of the specifics that we as Belk will be participating in, and really an opportunity to get our name out into the community and promote Belk as a name brand in the community, in the business community, and someone that you can count on to get the things you need to be successful in the business world.
Well, this focus on community, it's obviously core to, if not Belk's corporate mission, at least Ivan's immediate mission.
It's one of the values.
It's one of those seven.
It's probably why we're one of the most successful stores in the company, is from that community involvement.
And I think that's what really separated this particular Belk, is that Ivan consistently went into the neighborhood and tried to eliminate the preconceived notions most people had of a Belk. And he worked really hard on changing that fundamental and bringing people in and people getting to know who Ivan was, not just Belk the store, Ivan the person at Belk.
Wow, that's strong medicine.
Yeah. Well, and obviously it's proven itself, because for your store to be a store of choice for customers, I mean, obviously there's a lot of choices out there. And for them to choose that says a lot. And you talked before about the customer experience, and what an evolution stores like Belk have gone through, where the traditional retailer for years thought it was all about value, selection, and convenience, not thinking about the associates, not thinking about the customer experience. And so the forward-thinking retailers like Belk have really changed that game quite a bit in looking at how do you not only get customers into your store, but how do you keep those customers coming into your store trip after trip? And obviously return customers, Ivan, I got to guess, are a big part of your business.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, repeat business is the challenge, is keeping them. And we always like getting new customers. And again, that transcends from having those repeat customers tell their customers about the great experience, and ultimately building on that and sustaining the business over time. And again, I've got to say something about Rico again. I mean, the partnership and the relationship that he and I have developed have been instrumental with helping me understand a lot of the challenges that I may face with getting the associates to be productive and understanding the challenges that are in that type of environment, how to overcome them, or at minimum help me to communicate to them by identifying their personality type. How do I communicate in order to get a result from them, to not just get the result that I want, but help them to be more productive as well.
So tell us a little bit more about the event. What else can we expect to see if we attend this event? And although it seems like there's a pretty strong focus on females, the guys can get something out of this if we go.
Absolutely.
Right?
We have some of the top experts in their field, from social media to sales to communication to business growth and development, performance, even CEO mindset type of education that applies to everyone. We just tend to attract more of the businesswoman, because a lot of my clients happen to be businesswomen, but it is open to the public. If you are in business in any way, shape, or form, this is the catapult for your 2012. You will walk away with a blueprint, a plan, a step-by-step system that will allow you to be successful in 2012. And we've kind of taken a new twist in the event or expo arena. We're not just going to say, thank you for coming, have a nice day. We've developed an entire plan for the year through our experts and mentors that the individuals can participate and have accountability processes, have a program that walks them through and customized to their needs for the entire year. And in October, we're going to have an award show for those who have started in January, have followed the process, and we're going to see where they are in October.
Nice. We just had the show before this, had a guy that made custom putters.
So cool.
Give away a putter to
yeah,
the award
absolutely,
winner.
I yeah.
have to get you hooked up with Lee Thomas, Lee Thomas Studios.
And one of the things we want to do, so because it's January, we are giving away $2,000 in cash. So that's a great kickoff for 2012.
That's a lot of money, even
that's
to
right.
Jim.
Well, and the timing couldn't be better for the event, because with New Year's resolutions
exactly.
and as people take their personal inventory for the new year on things they want to improve, one of the things I found interesting in looking at the rundown for the summit is there seems to be a focus not only on business presence, but also on personal presence.
Yes.
And the genuineness that comes by connecting those two. And maybe you can talk to that a little
Certainly.
Bit.
Certainly. One of the things we've realized in our experience is that if your health, mindset, and life are not in balance, neither does your business. And that holds true, I don't care if you're an entrepreneur or an executive or a retail manager. So we wanted to create that balance, and we brought not just vendors who will provide you with that balance, but also experts that will be speaking from stage. Like one of them is Chris Kavanaugh. She teaches about the CEO mindset, how to have that mindset of a CEO, whether you are a stay-at-home mom, a 14-year-old child in school, or a business owner. And when you start having that balance, things start to become more productive, whether you're in business or at home. So we really try to create that entire package that helps you to stay in the game, not just one-sided. I can give you a blueprint, I can give you the dots, but if you're not prepared to do what it takes to execute that effectively, it's just a bunch of words and you're just going to get frustrated.
Well, I'm sure you find all the time, as I do, that you run into people who, through the economy or whatever, have started their own businesses now, and one of the biggest struggles they have are really how to present that, how to talk about their right. business, how to describe to others what they're doing. And that's all part of this as well, right?
Absolutely. One of my strengths is sales and presentation skills. I either teach professionals how to speak about their business and product, either live or up-and-coming speakers and presenters. And it's amazing to me that you go to a networking event and someone asks you, what do you do? And half the time you either spend explaining that, educating that, or bumbling through that, and then wonder why there's no sales. So that is one of the key things that we're going to open the summit with, is how to use effective communication to connect either with your client or relationships in your life.
Well, I've got a question for you, and it's a two-part question. And the first part of it is, how did you find Rico? And the deeper question is, how do you go about shopping for this kind of professional counsel and expertise? What criteria should someone be looking for? What kind of questions do you ask a Rico or someone else when you're entertaining the idea of engaging them to help you on this kind of stuff?
Well, I actually didn't find Rico.
He found you?
He did. He came into the store and we struck up that conversation. And quite frankly, it was his level of expertise that led me into this whole process. So it wasn't anything that I asked him specifically, other than to help explain a little bit more of what it is he does. And then from there, in fact, I've said this to him numerous times, it's so nice talking to him, because I don't have to think about anything. It's very natural. And I think that's part of his level of expertise and understanding what type of person I am and what type of questions to ask in order to get the information that he needs. So it's really been because of his level or the business he's in to get all the information necessary to put together what it is that he does.
Well, I get the sense that it would be very difficult for someone else in your general arena, Rico, to displace you with this client.
Pretty much.
Which speaks very well to you. Now that you know Ivan, you've experienced the positive results from this kind of relationship. Now that you know, what should someone look for, you think, in somebody like that? Is it the person that asks the great questions? Or what characteristics should we be looking for if we're going to hire somebody like Rico? Or do we just give up and just call Rico? Rico says, just call Rico.
You know, one of the neat things about the relationship that he and I have evolved is, and Rico said it earlier, he said, you know, we just don't put an expo out there and then we're done. He's always thinking about what's the next step. And I find myself when I'm out there meeting people through my relationships, you know, the first thing I think of is my relationship with him and say, you know what, I need to connect you to Rico. I need you to put in touch back with him. And those are some of the things that he and I have talked about, just the whole networking and relationship building type scenario. So for me, I don't necessarily think that it's something I'm looking for, but as I'm talking and listening to the individual, I need to connect you with Rico. And we talk about this all the time. You know, his greatest joy in what he does is connecting other people with other people. And that from there is very powerful because you just never know what it's going to lead to.
And that's very true. That's been my experience with Rico. So, boy, wow, what an endorsement for you, huh, Rico?
But I would like to answer the question you asked. If you're a business owner and you're looking to, how do I improve my business, whether it's sales or my employee performance, the first thing you have to determine is what exactly do you want to improve about your business, and then what is the desired outcome you want of that improvement? And now find someone who can deliver that desired outcome in the way and the manner you expect. You don't have to know how it got done, but you need to know how and the end game looks like. And that's the biggest challenge. Most clients I speak to, I ask them, well, what's the desired outcome? How do you want this to look like in the end? They have no idea.
Their jaw drops.
So we have to start from the beginning. But if you are seriously considering, and right now in this economy and the way things are going, I would highly recommend if you are, I don't care if you're a corporation, individual, entrepreneur, find a mentor, find someone, a consultant that can help you walk you through that process. It will be well worth the investment, and it will help you to overcome challenges before they occur. You have a plan. That's part of your mission. And one of the things a lot of my clients are now really thinking about is, what is the next step? If you're not thinking 2, 3, 4 steps ahead, how do you know the decision you're about to make is going to affect where you want to go?
Right.
And so if you're out there considering someone, have those answers and you'll be able to interview more effectively and find who better fits your organization, your ideals, but more importantly, your desired outcome.
You see, Jim, I told you how much smarter we would be just 30, 45 minutes after having Rico and his buddy Ivan in the studio.
And you were so right.
Didn't I call it right?
I'd rather spend 45 minutes with Jim as his background.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's
but while we have you both here, I guess one of the things, you know, as we sit here today, we're a couple of weeks in front of Thanksgiving. We're a couple of weeks from the holiday shopping season. And anybody who's been in retail knows that that's a very exciting time of year. It's a very important time of year. And who better here on Sales Talk Radio to talk to someone who's maybe getting into retail sales for the first time this year as to what can they expect and what's really going to separate them from the pack? What can they do as far as really being present with the customers that's going to make a difference this year? What kind of advice would you give them?
Provide exceptional service above and beyond the client's expectations. We did a 5-year study over 10,000 consumers, and the number one thing that we kept hearing is the experience from the time they walk in the door to the time they get into the checkout. That's what keeps coming them back. So if you're going into retail or you're already in retail, you're working at a retail store, focus on the need of that consumer. Listen to what they want. Don't focus so much on all the other things that are going on and the things that pertain to you. Give them individual attention, and it will keep coming back and refer you time and time and time again.
Ivan?
For this time of year, my biggest bit of advice would be to definitely have a plan, a high level of organization, because customers at this time of year, as you said, it's a very exciting time, but it's also a very stressful time. And they want to get in it, and they want to get out, and they want to be serviced, and they want to make it easy. So my advice would be to have a plan, be very organized, and be able to serve them in an efficient way, so that when they leave, they leave going, wow, that was great. It was great. It was quick. It was great. And can't wait to go back. That would be my advice.
Great.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having you guys on the show. Before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get to the Belkett Forum and that we get all the latest data on how to take advantage of this event.
Well, for those of you, depending on where you're coming from, it's located in Norcross, Peachtree Corners, right off of Peachtree Corner Circle, right off of Peachtree Parkway. It's a lovely outdoor arena with lots of other shops in there as well. And we encourage everybody to come visit us. So thank you.
Yes, sir.
And you can learn about the Stay in the Game Summit occurring January 14th, 2012 at the Atlanta Perimeter Hotel and Suites. That's across the street from Perimeter Mall. You can go to www.sensationalyou.net. We're now on Facebook. We just got a new Facebook page.
Oh, wow.
You can, again, you know, Stay in the Game. And or you can contact me directly at 770-616-8080.
All right. Nicely done, gentlemen. Jim, thanks for sitting in for Steve Cadley.
Oh, thanks for allowing me to.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again soon, yeah? All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Jim Bulger. Our guest today, Ivan, I'm probably going to screw up his last name, but I'll try it. Yuspa, is that it?
Pretty good.
All right. We'll just call him Ivan. Jim, Ivan, Enrico Pena, which I like saying that, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Atlanta Sales Talk Radio.